It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business. Coming up on this week's episode, Irish CFOs forecast strong growth in 2024. Now, they also prioritise cost control, investments in artificial intelligence, surprise, surprise, and sustainability reporting. That's according to a recent EY Ireland survey. Later on, Dararka Dennis, Assurance Partner and Sustainability Services Lead at EY Ireland, will go through the key findings of that report and also a look at some of the key challenges that the CFOs have identified. Later too, you'll meet Helen Bracken from Offaly's Fox Covert Farm. They're on a mission to produce high quality nutritious superfoods very sustainably. They've recently diversified into growing hemp seed, so you learn all about that family's journey. I think it's the fifth generation of family to manage the farm, including their participation in the Super Value and Local Enterprise Office supported Food Academy programme. I'll also be getting an update on all the events taking place across April from your Chambers of Commerce, your local enterprise offices, and I'll be joined too by Jackie Carroll, the CEO of the Laois Chamber Alliance. If you want to get in touch with me here in the studio this evening, as always, the best and quickest way to do so is by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103. Alternatively, you can email me on business@midlands103.com. But I'm going to kick off this evening by looking at supply chains. What aspect of supply chains? Well, supply chain disruption. If we go back over the past couple of years, we all know what emerged from China about 4 years ago caused disruption unlike we've never seen before. Hopefully we'll never see again. But following on from that, we saw a couple of years back how a ship getting stuck in the Suez Canal caused a huge backlog of shipments and shipping containers getting to the certain parts of the world. Since the Russian invasion in Ukraine, we've also seen huge issues around energy costs, but also in terms of goods moving across the continent, across the world. Recent activity by militants and by pirates effectively in the Red Sea area have also caused major disruption. And as of last week, when that container ship hit the bridge in Baltimore, it in turn set off a chain of events that have, you know, huge implication on global supply chains. Well, here in the Midlands and locally enough, there is a new project being spearheaded by a group of organisations, and ultimately they're looking at helping your business to predict and minimise supply chain disruption for your business. It's called Rescue4EU. That stands for Resilient Supply Chains for Europe. And one of the collaborating partners in this is the Advanced Technology and Manufacturing Cluster, or ATOM Cluster, managed by Katrina Morton. Very good evening, Katrina.
Hi, Ronan. Thanks for having me.
Katrina,
here.
This is a very new initiative. What can you tell us about it so far?
So I suppose you mentioned, about the importance of it right now, and it's timely, you know, particularly considering what happened last week. So this, you know, we had the kickoff meeting in Bremen for this project. So it's a European project, over 4 million euros worth in funding, and ATOM are fortunate to be one of the partners in it. So we're one of 10 and we're partnering with other associations and institutions. It's led by Composites United in Germany, you know, with kind of leading stellar partners as well, including Fraunhofer, and also people that have really strong expertise, not only recognised in Europe, but globally in supply chain and logistics. So our role is to really understand the needs of companies, and there's six clusters involved with this project. And the anticipation is that we will represent 1,000 companies, SMEs in particular, across different ecosystems. So we are representing a number of manufacturing companies here in Ireland, and by doing so, we'll be able to bring to the table what are the needs of the manufacturing based here in Ireland, how have they been affected in terms of supply chain, and how can we create models that will enable them to, you know, prevent incidents, you know, such as COVID if it happens again. How can we shorten that supply chain and give confidence back to those SMEs by creating models that will detect and anticipate disruptions in the future?
I notice the word resilient comes into the heading of this new grouping and a new initiative too, and I suppose that's probably a key aspect and something that within the cluster you're constantly doing as well, is giving local companies an opportunity to maybe look at either new suppliers or alternative or backup suppliers right across Europe and even further afield.
Indeed, and I suppose throughout, you know, as part of our first pillar within our organisation, we looked continuously, you know, do we know who's on our doorstep? And I think that's a huge ambition. Obviously, across Europe, You know, if we look at bringing in, you know, equipment and materials as far as Asia, you know, the further out you go, the more the increased likelihood of increased disruption as well. But in a recent survey that we did, for example, within the cluster, 94% of our members said they were now able, they recognised and were had an opportunity to do businesses with companies that were more locally based that they weren't aware of before the cluster began in 2021. So that's more of what we want to try and nurture. Another element of this is also creating a business-to-business platform as well. So it's about resilience in the form of trying to increase the adoption of technologies by companies as well so that they can become more agile. And with that brings opportunities, obviously, for Irish companies that are not just on the manufacturing side, but are on the technological side as well. So that those that are in our ICT cluster, for example, and that really want to be ambitious and to lend solutions there. So it'll provide them with kind of a, not only a national forum for that, but a European forum to kind of highlight what their capabilities are as well.
A lot of your function and your mandate as well is to support innovation within companies. Is innovation within a supply chain, is that something maybe that was probably overlooked because supply chains were just these things and they seemed to function quite well forever until recently?
It is, but I think now, and I know you're going to have a speaker on later, you know, as we look further and companies kind of deepen their focus on ESG and sustainability, you know, looking at your supply chain, identifying where that material, the history of it, the traceability of it is coming more and more to the front. So that's another reason why this project is now such a focus as well, not only for our members, but for those across Europe and for those in the European Commission as well.
I suppose anybody that's listening in, I'll give you the website. It's www.resc4eu.com. So resc4eu.com. A complicated title. It stands, as I said, for resilient supply chains in Europe. But when you get on there, it'll give you an idea as to the groupings that have come together and the resources that are available for it. Because clearly, as Katrina's pointing out, something that companies are experiencing too, and it's adding to the challenges of innovation within companies. And you're constantly kind of unearthing new challenges that companies are facing in that very space.
Yeah, and I suppose it goes back to the backbone. There's six clusters involved with this. So it's trying to kind of streamline that process as well, understanding what the needs are of the companies and then trying to match that need with the capability that's already out there. So we do that, you know, on a daily basis with the cluster here in Ireland, but this will expand it and understand what are the capabilities across Europe that might match their needs as well.
And is there any plan of it, you know, to survey existing companies then outside of the cluster's remit or whatever, or can people actually like get involved with this themselves?
Yeah, and I'm going to have a newsletter as well going out later this week. So if people even, to simplify it, because the website is quite a tricky one, if you want to go on Atom website, sign up for the newsletter and I'll be sharing information on this on an ongoing basis as well.
Yeah, it sounds like something very, very much needed and can be a valuable resource too. And I suppose it's helping, again, giving companies an indication of what's happening out there and those kind of cross academia and industry collaborations that hopefully will ultimately benefit companies too. There's other innovation and R&D supports available for companies too. And again, you're continuing your work in sort of highlighting those for companies. What examples have you brought this evening?
So I suppose, you know, our primary remit with the cluster is to try and bring knowledge out of knowledge organisations. We're very fortunate in the region to have the Technological University of the Shannon, where I'm based, but also Irish Manufacturing Research as well. So a goal here is to try and say, how can we bring out this information and make it accessible to manufacturing SMEs so that they can move further up the value chain? Within that, then we tried to kind of deepen the focus on certain areas and look to say, is there gaps in the ecosystem? You know, what projects could we really get companies involved with that's going to benefit them and benefit the sector as well? So one such one, I was up in Intertrade Ireland last week and we signed the contract for a Polymer Connect. So this is a project which is supported by Intertrade Ireland, as I mentioned, but it brings all of the key partners across the island of Ireland together in the polymer space. And ultimately, it's about having a detailed map and a dynamic platform that we aim to map over 300 companies in this space. You know, the polymer sector is really the backbone for the medical device sector. And, you know, that is continuing to grow. And the forecast of it, as IBEC released recently, it's only going to strengthen and strengthen. So with that, we need a strong polymer sector as well. But, you know, we also look at our packaging and the innovation that's required there. And all of that kind of comes back to our polymer sector. So with that project, you know, we're partnering with Northern Ireland Polymer Association. We have IBEC as well involved as key partners, First Polymer Training SkillNet. And really, it's a kind of a consortium approach as well to mapping this data. And through data, we hope that we'll be able to provide evidence and analyse that and create. It's about creating new value chains. And by doing so, and by strengthening that, we're able to move companies and our sector further up the value chain.
And a huge part of, again, if you're doing that thorough review of your supply chains too, like you mentioned things like packaging there, how you can, you know, find alternative suppliers, alternative products, maybe that that maybe tick a number of boxes, both, you know, cost control, sustainability, and a backup supply as well. And that's even, there is an event coming up as well, BioDirect Roundtable Plastic Packaging.
Yeah, so this is another example. You know, really for innovation to happen, you know, we need to bring companies along that value chain together in order to create something that's really disruptive. And packaging is another key example of this. There's so many ambitious companies out here, both from the medical side and also from, you know, the food packaging area. An example, they'd be two streams that are really have strong ambition, you know, to bring in bio-based products. There's challenges with that, of course, but equally, we also have such a strong research community within TUS in this space as well, and within Munster Technological University, that are also the key partners for that project too. So really my role as a cluster manager is, how can we bring these key partners together, have really constructive conversations, and hopefully we seed ideas. Our role then is to try and support them identify this funding stream that will support their ambition and really take their hand and follow through on that and create new opportunities then for not only their companies, but for further employment in this space in Ireland.
Fantastic. Your website again, atom.ie?
That's it.
Right, first time as well. Katrina Morden, Manager Atom Cluster. Thank you as always for that too. And if anybody wants to get in touch, I suppose Katrina said, their own website there, atom.ie. Sign up for the newsletter as well, and you can receive all that information that Katrina will produce over time on that Rescue4EU in terms of helping you as an SME owner to basically de-risk and take some of the uncertainty out of those supply chains. Katrina, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for coming in this evening.
Taking care of business. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Still to come on Taking Care of Business, I'll be looking at the results of an EY Ireland survey of chief financial officers. Overall, they predicted that they expected their businesses to grow and grow steadily in 2024, and they outlined key areas of investment and also some of the key challenges. So around 7:30 this evening, you'll hear all about that report. And then later on, I'll be talking to Jackie Carroll, the CEO of Leash Chamber Alliance, looking at the events that are taking place in Leash over this month. And I'll have a quick roundup of what's happening across the Midlands with the various organisations and different support bodies in terms of business events for April 2024. So lots to come here. But before that, I mentioned before the break how I was going to get the opportunity to taste some brownies made with hemp seed. And that hemp seed comes from a farm in County Offaly, in Kilcormac. And one of the main people behind that is Helen Bracken of Fox Covert Farm. Very good evening, Helen.
Thanks very much, Ronan, for having me on.
Firstly, I think it's a fifth generation family farm. Where did the name come from?
Fox Covert, that was the name of a field at the back of the house. It was the first field that we sowed the hemp in. And we decided then we'd name it Fox Covert Farm, that's where
we began. So when did the journey and when did you begin to look at hemp seed as an alternative, as a product?
We looked at it, we were looking at ways, we're predominantly tillage farmers first and foremost, and we were looking at ways to make the farm more sustainable, particularly I was let go from my job there due to COVID. So my husband, Joe, came in one day from the farm and he had got a text from some of the members in IFA asking, would any of the farmers be interested in growing hemp? So he had a look into that side of it. And I said, I'll say, if you go ahead growing, I'll have a look and see, can we see about processing it? So that's where the journey began. And yeah, we came up against lots of challenges, and with the help of the Food Academy, the local enterprise office, and the local development company, we 3.5 years later, we have two products on shelves in Super Value, Evergreen, and some local shops.
There's nothing like a good challenge, because that's where the best business emerged from, because it was easy somebody else to be doing it. What is hemp seed?
Hemp seed, it's a seed. It's it grows from hemp plants, which are, what we call it, nature's purifier, because its ability to sequester CO2 and purify air between 2 and 4 times more than trees, depending on the growth stage of the trees. It's also brilliant for the land with its organic carbon and the amount of root matter and green mulch that it has on the plant.
Is it easy to grow?
Easy enough to grow, and we're able to grow it with no pesticides, herbicides or fungicides are needed. The harvesting and the drying of it is a very, very challenging process. My husband Joe and son Kieran have that challenge. And yeah, it is very challenging. Yeah, that's where the real difficulty is.
So it's easy enough, relatively easy to grow. And is it relatively, dare I say, climate proof, because we see a lot of, you know, a lot of wetter seasons and
yes.
That. Is it does it enjoy those conditions, or does it present
challenges? It likes the sun. Last year now, you know, with a lot of rain in July and August, it wouldn't have helped with the return from it. But, you know, we did get our crop and we saved it and all that at the same time.
It's a big move then to go from, say, deciding, hearing from you from the IFA that you wanted to, that maybe you might consider growing hemp seed, as you say, to look at then starting the process, that it's taken 3.5 years. And when it came to that investment, did you get any support in that, or given its nature, did you have to kind of maybe back it yourselves?
We backed a lot of it ourselves, but also we did get support from the local development company, which is Leader, and the local enterprise office gave us, you know, mentoring and that type of thing. The Food Academy then gave us the strategy as to the safety, you know, your marketing, your finance, forecasting, pricing your products, food safety, the sustainability side of things, you know, educated us a bit more on that. You know, that's the help we got.
And I suppose what differentiates yourselves from a lot of other people who might be looking at growing a plant or something to create an alternative product is you're subject to the stringent guidelines of the Health Products Regulatory Authority as well.
That's
because
right.
You're dealing with hemp seed. So
yes.
That in itself adds more complexity to it.
It does indeed, yes. Each year we have to apply for a licence to grow it, and there is stipulations as to where you can grow it. It can't be near schools, it can't be near your main thoroughfares. So, you know, you have to try and get it in a field at the back of the farm, or at least away from the main roads anyways, you know.
It sounds intriguing now. Like, there isn't camouflage nets over it around my daddy.
So. No. Now, we did grow some rapeseed or some corn to cob. Can't think now. To by the side of the road to hide
okay,
it.
Okay,
yeah.
Hide it. Yeah, you're giving away all the secrets now.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah. That's
but,
it.
In terms then of, say, when you first started looking at this, the percentage of land that you were going to dedicate towards it, has that increased steadily now that you've got the processing facilities on board, or do you see that growing even further?
Yeah, we're not sure. At the moment, we're staying to pretty much what we started growing with, you know, so around 15 or 16 acres. Yeah, that's where we're going to stay at the moment and see how we go with
that. Is there anybody else in the country doing similar?
There is some down in Wicklow. There's different pockets doing a small bit, but I don't think any of them has processed up to the bringing them from farm to fork as we have as of yet.
So then your route to market then, if you've decided to go with this product, how do you, number one, who is your target market, and how do you tell them that your product exists and how they can get it?
Yeah, well, through social media, and we do a lot of tastings in Super Value most weeks, and our press releases and things like that. Yeah, the nutritional value is absolutely huge. We'll say we get often asked, we have the two products, Hemp Hearts and Milled Hemp, and we're often asked which is our favourite. But really, what it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for more protein in a product, the Hemp Hearts has 32 grams per 100 and has the omega 3 and 6, which is 28 grams per 100. And while the Milled Hemp, if you are looking for vitamin B12 or a higher amount of fibre, that one is the better one. Now, both products have your magnesium, your iron, zinc, copper, fibre, the omega 3 and 6, a source of potassium as well. And basically, you can add them to any meal to boost your nutrition and build your immunity. The Hemp Hearts, most people would love it on their porridge, their cereals, yogurts, smoothies, that type of thing. Well, the Milled Hemp is probably better on... we'll say on your salads, or sorry, a Milled Hemp is better in your soups and stews, stir fries, curries, that type of thing. Brownies, everyone loves the brownies with the Milled Hemp in it. I add the Hemp Hearts to our brown bread as well. You know, absolutely loved by everybody.
And those like kind of nutritional values, like the protein and stuff like that, they're all naturally occurring in the hemp,
aren't
they?
Absolutely.
That's phenomenal.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 100% pure. There's nothing added, you know. And, you know, it's suitable for vegans, vegetarians, contains naturally occurring sugars. It's a gluten-free product, you know. Yeah, you have everything.
And the packaging that you've brought in with you too, and with the product in it, it's lovely. A little window at the bottom, you can actually take a sneak peek at what it looks like. Again,
yes.
Was this all kind of a product of the Food Academy that you got that guidance on that?
Yes, we did. We did indeed. Yes. Yeah.
It's fantastic. It looks, it really does. It kind of, it's a fantastic looking brand and really interesting product. Where is it globally? There's always one country that is leading this. Like where did this originate? Like, I mean, if this is effectively a superfood that can be grown and processed locally, where did it all begin? Who was the first person who wanted to discover that?
It was grew all over the world back in the 1900s, and that's such a versatile plant. It can be used for food, for hempcrete, building houses, the sustainability of it is unbelievable. You're talking about hempcrete.
You're okay. Loads of alternative uses. I suppose your focus is on it as a superfood as well. On the back of your package, which we see with so many kind of local products now, and I think it really helps in telling a story. There's a picture of your family. When it came to moving towards hemp, as well as the business bread, was your element of that was to allow that kind of succession piece as well, to be able to not just pass on land, but to give more than that.
Yeah, our son and husband, they do the farming and the growing of the crops and that. My daughter, Lena, does the social media and that type of thing. Teresa and myself do the baking for the tastings, and Aideen does design and that type of thing whenever we have changes to do on packages, on brochures, on leaflets, and, you know, we always have somebody
really
to do something.
It really is family involvement as well. And then what's next on your horizons? Are you looking at adding more products, expanding existing product bases?
Yes, we're looking at a number of different things. We're early stages yet, so, you know, we're keeping our options open.
Early stages from a hemp perspective, as well as fifth generation
absolutely.
On the farm, but it sounds
absolutely.
Like things are the next generation have things in good hand as well. If you want to find out more, foxcovertfarm.ie, that's the website, nice and straightforward. They're based in Kilcormac County, Offaly. Helen Bracken, thank you so much for that. Brilliant story. And Helen did mention the Super Value and Local Enterprise Office supported Food Academy, which again, many guests on this show over the past 6 years have gone through that as well. Applications are still open for that, and the closing date is this coming Friday the 5th of April. Best place to find out about is localenterprise.ie. and just look there for Food Support's Food Academy programme. It's not too late to sign up for it. And if you want to be another one of those great Midlands businesses that has got go to that programme and can reap the benefits as Helen's business has, get applying there quickly and get that application in. Helen, thanks for coming in this evening. And
thanks very much.
Looking forward to seeing what we can create with these products. And that's Helen Bracken there from Fox Covert Farm in Kilcormac. So tuned after break, I'll bring you the results and updates from that EY Ireland survey of chief financial officers. Overall, very positive, optimistic outlook for business for the year ahead. It also identified where the key challenges are and where they predict investment will need to be for businesses in order to continue and maintain their growth. Those brownies made with the hemp seed are just delicious. Very thanks to Helen Bracken there from Fox Covert Farm for those. The rest will find a good home here in the station, and indeed a good few of them will end up back at my house. But we're checking out foxcovertfarm.ie. Now, moving on to, I mentioned before the break, the findings from a recent EY Ireland survey of chief financial officers right across the country. Overall, very much a positive, optimistic outlook for many CFOs. But the report also showed where they expected the most investment from companies would go this year, and indicated and highlighted some of the key challenges that they felt their companies were facing. To dive a bit deeper into this, I'm delighted to be joined by Dirarca Dennis, Assurance Partner and Sustainability Services Lead at EY Ireland. A very good evening, Dirarca.
Evening, Ronan. Thanks very much for having me on.
There are overall a very much positive overview kind of from the results from the survey. Can you take us through some of the key findings from that perspective and the CFO's outlook for the year ahead?
Well, indeed. Look, Ronan, for me, it's great to see a bit of positivity coming out of these surveys, because often people focus on the negatives. I think what we're seeing is that the CFO and finance director community of Ireland are aware of fiscal fragility and that the economy is, you know, not as buoyant as we might like. But on the same point, they're taking up kind of positive aspects and looking how we are. It's a soft landing in terms of what we might have anticipated from an economic turnaround in the last couple of years. We've also been through a few difficult years. So I suppose the CFO community are putting their weight behind their businesses and the work they've put in over the last number of years to keep businesses afloat and keep the lights on. And I'm very, very much focused on making sure that they're taking the opportunities to put their businesses out in the front foot. And also, I suppose, learning from what they've got wrong in previous years. So I think very much listening to the business, listening to their broader kind of their customers and making sure that they understand where they're at. So I think it's a positive outturn for them, but with a realistic mindset with regard to costs and control of costs.
Of course, so if we go through any period of maybe instability or uncertainty, the CFO's role, dare I say, becomes even more important, and they often become the real decision makers in a company. So at a time when companies are faced with, you know, so many almost new challenges in terms of, you know, ESG and meeting all those various requirements, unsurprisingly from this report, things like cost control and improving efficiencies still comes out there as the number one priority for companies.
Yeah, look, Ronan, the reality is that, you know, notwithstanding the optimism, people, the only thing that a finance director or CFO can control are the costs in their business. So it's really important to keep them under wraps. I suppose the title bean counter isn't there for nothing for many people, but there's a much broader remit now, as you say, with regard to the sustainability agenda. But, you know, fundamentally, it's keeping controls in line with what is expected, looking after the bottom line and thereafter taking every opportunity that's out there.
Again, the survey also looked at, I suppose, what the main driver of looking at things like sustainability and ESG reporting was. Largely, it's shown maybe half of the respondents were saying it's probably driven by needs for compliance, but you believe that's going to shift as well, and that people are going to really look at doing the right thing and making sure that their company is a leader in terms of decarbonising and leading the sustainability agenda.
Yeah, Ronan, that is a real challenge. And I suppose the role of the CFO has become much broader. And you're right. I suppose regulation has driven an awful lot of the conversation in the last 18 months, where businesses and even customers are talking to, please tell us what you're doing. And regulation will force people to explain their role in decarbonising the country. As we know, the climate action plan is for every citizen of the state. So the reality is the regulation is driving people to think about what do we do, how do we do it. But then as people are beginning to look at that, they're saying, actually, there's maybe an opportunity here. You know, you look at renewable energy, you say, well, actually, if I could change to a different way of producing, manufacturing or supplying goods, that may actually be, I suppose, in the short term, maybe a slightly higher cost, but in the long term, at a better cost for a business. So it is, I suppose, an incentive for many businesses to think about reducing the carbon footprint, but at the same time moving towards maybe a more economic way of of business. So there is an opportunity for businesses, and there's also an opportunity for companies that do look at their business because they can fit into another business and help support their carbon agenda as well. So it depends on where you are and the kind of the value chain of the business community. If you're manufacturing and selling into another partner, if you do things better, that will make your business more attractive as a supplier into a larger business, etc. So that there are plenty of opportunities once you start to unpick that onion and think a little bit about where you sit and how you work with others in the business community.
From your own perspective, are CFOs or those people responsible for reporting ESG stuff, are they now becoming a little bit more digging a bit deeper to ensure that the numbers that they are going to report on are actually, you know, they're actually validated, they're bona fide results, and that there is no greenwashing taking place?
Absolutely, Ronan, and that's a real critical concern, you know, for many business owners and CFOs. They are absolutely out there thinking about what they put out in the public domain, because nobody wants to be greenwashing, quite frankly. So it is about working through, where does that number come from? How have you identified it? You know, when people are talking to their banking arrangements, they want to make sure they're given the right information, because that's how working capital is brought through from banks. So I think at the moment, CFOs are very actively involved, much more so than they would have been 24 months ago, in making sure that information that's put out into the public domain, and public may mean banking, it may mean suppliers, it may mean customers. So it's not just literally public in the sense of putting on a website, etc. Anything that's put outside the company, the four walls of the company, is invariably put through the ringer from a finance perspective as well, to make sure it makes sense and it's consistent with what has actually occurred in the business.
The survey also looked at other aspects and other areas that CFOs are keeping a sharp focus on. Unsurprisingly, talent retention and recruitment appears on that, over 50% citing it as a key challenge that could impact their business's growth. Did you get any further learnings on that, and other trends that emerged that maybe you weren't expecting?
Well, I suppose what we saw was that, you know, people have actually invested in their talent and are willing to kind of retain people and reskill people, which I'm delighted to see, because we've seen a number of years of people being challenged around having the right workforce. But now I suppose what I'm also seeing is people want to do things more effectively and efficiently, and at the same time give opportunities to those that are in their employment to do something different, which I think is great. It allows people to upskill, change roles and seek new opportunities without leaving an organisation. So that was a nice surprise to see it being confirmed. I suppose the other thing that we're seeing is just, you know, a little bit more interest in thinking about, thinking about M&A and buying businesses as well. And through that, potentially there's that whole opportunity of bringing new people into your workforce with different skills through buying a business. So again, talent acquisition in a different guise. But I think in doing that, consolidating the finance function and broadening the skill set. So, you know, there's lots of opportunities, I think, for CFOs, and they're beginning to think a little bit more laterally than maybe they might have been able to do in the last couple of years.
I would tend to agree with you on that. I think it's notable out there at the minute, over even the past 2 years, the amount of Irish companies, and some very much in that SME category, who are making mergers and acquisitions, who are buying that talent in or buying over competitors or sister businesses. It's really like almost a change of the business mindset in Ireland. We're probably likely to see a lot more M&As then in the next while.
Yep, I absolutely think so, Ronan. And look, and with that comes opportunity and talent. So as you buy another business, there's kind of integration of culture, integration of skills, and also just making sure that you're still keeping to your North Star, because as you make a change, any change can bring about a bit of disruption. But not all disruption is negative. Quite often it's positive. So I think it is great, and it's nice to see that people are taking the opportunities when they're out there. And it would also suggest that they've made good decisions previously to keep the business whole and have the funds and the ability to buy another business.
Yeah, it is. I think it's one to watch, because I know there's even talking to business owners, like it's definitely something that's on their radar now. It may not have been in the past, and it's something they maybe had never considered, but all of a sudden, when you do your due diligence, it starts to make sense. And if the merger can actually take place, there can be a lot of benefits for all sides in it. And it's unsurprising also, we mentioned about talent retention being a challenge, but also AI. Now, thankfully, you haven't said that AI is going to replace 90% of jobs, because I think we all know that's not going to happen. But yet, of the CFOs surveyed, majority expected that investment in AI would significantly increase within the next 2 years. Any areas in particular you think that the investment in AI, or where AI will be utilised most by businesses?
Yeah, I do actually. I think in budgeting and forecasting, people are going to use AI in a much more productive fashion, because they're going to use historical information and build from that historical information insights an ability to spot trends. So I think that'll be really, really helpful going forward. And you're absolutely right, AI won't replace the workforce, but I think AI will support the workforce in making better decisions. And because the CFO role is now both forward-looking and backward-looking, previously we would have associated the CFO with looking backwards and telling us what happened, I think AI is going to be really critical in helping CFOs and their teams think through how to predict trends and predict how the business might operate. And I've seen it recently with clients where they've actually used it to spot anomalies in their businesses. They've kind of gone, that's not what I expect to see. What is the problem? And, you know, again, it can be something as simple as, you know, increased electricity prices or not being really the problem. It's actually increased utilization of certain plants and machinery that weren't anticipated. And being able to help explain, fact patterns that emerge over time that aren't really evident until you actually put it all together. So I think AI is going to be really powerful, but AI is really dependent on the architect of what you're looking for. So the CFO and their team will still be critical to making sure that AI is used effectively.
And many businesses reported that overall they felt they're still at the discovery stage when it comes to harnessing and integrating AI into their business too. And I guess, yes, it will depend on the type of business or the service delivered as to what they can do. Of course, there'll be some regulation under the AI Act. So are we also going to see many businesses now having to go and actually produce very robust AI policies to have it out in public as to exactly how they use it and maybe how they don't use it, obviously?
Yeah, I think it's like the AI Act obviously has come in and it's kind of to make sure there's due rigor around how it's used and that it's used in the right way. I think there's a slight fear factor when it comes to AI as well, because people know that when you use it, it's an open and public platform unless you've designed it particularly for your own business. So I think AI will be powerful. It will be used when it's used in the right way. It will help automate information. It will also help detect risk. But it will also help in terms of just delivering real-time insights. And that's something that people really need to manage their businesses effectively, because we are in a very, I suppose, turbulent times. And that challenge means that people really want to know things much faster, you know. So I think that's going to be really helpful. And I think, you know, when I think about fraud, potentially there's an opportunity there for AI to kind of spot that too. Although we do know AI recently was used in a very big fraud, but, you know, effectively for businesses, it'll be used in ways that help that prevent the business being exploited inappropriately and help give insight.
Yeah, overall, it said amongst the people, the 150 people surveyed, that usage of AI remains relatively modest, with just 26% claiming to have leveraged it for enhanced efficiency or automating manual tasks or risk detection, which,
correct,
in fairness, is a very practical and really useful use of AI. I think for some people, it's to kind of take a deep breath and see, yes, if it can bring the efficiencies and it can help optimize and bring that process efficiency, but we're not going to be using it to make these critical business decisions. If you're doing that, there's something else you need to be looking at, I imagine.
Yeah, and look, the reality is for most organisations, they don't have enough within their teams to actually do what they need to do. So using AI in a way that kind of takes people away from manual tasks or tasks that are kind of can be machine driven will leverage that talent to do things that are critical decision making points. So it will be used in that way. It's just about getting the right test program to see what it looks like. I'd say budgets and forecasts are ones that are fairly safe where people feel comfortable, you know, using information to leverage historical information. I think people are afraid to use it in a way that might give insight to kind of how their business is run for fear that of the open platform. But I do genuinely feel that it's something that will help. People are using it all the time for report writing now, and where they actually put information in a way that helps them generate a report and a much faster turnaround when you're reporting to a board or reporting to a committee or pulling something together in terms of a proposal. So we're seeing people use it in practical ways that then allow them to take a second pass and actually improve a reporting function or improve information that's been provided to another party within their organisation.
Dirarke, Dennis, thank you so much for that this evening. It's a very comprehensive report. We're checking out for anybody that is in business, in SMEs, available there to the EY website as well. But Dirarke, thank you so much for that this evening and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening. Bye.
Dorarica Dennis there is Assurance Partner and Sustainability Services Lead at EY Ireland. Overall, the CFOs were predicting around an average of 11% growth for their business for 2024. The survey was carried out with 150 senior finance leaders surveyed for the annual EY CFO survey. Plenty to sink your teeth into there. Lots to look back on. You know, some of those key challenges that are probably of no surprise, but lovely to see that they are being reflected and being acknowledged by these companies, but also that they can still see a very optimistic outlook on that. I know it doesn't apply to every business, but lots in there for everybody to look at, and definitely worth a look. Time for a quick break. After that, we're going to catch up with what's happening and will be happening across the month of April in business circles around the Midlands, and in particular in County Laois. Delighted to be joined now by the CEO of Laois Chamber Alliance, Jackie Carroll. A very good evening, Jackie.
Hi, Ronan. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Jackie, I know you have plenty of stuff happening in Laois. You've bedded into a new role as well. What's going to be happening across April and beyond?
Okay, it's a quick fire round, okay? I would point people for tourism-related materials to look at our What's On guide on Laois tourism, and you can go in and figure out what you would like to go and see. But I would like to give a mention to the Craft and Vintage Fair that's happening on the 7th of April in Sullis in Port Arlington. And then following that, we have our first business council. We're really excited to welcome Laois Tourism and Laois Chamber members to come and kind of define what the Chamber is. That's on April 16th. We have a lunch and learn event in Preston House on April 18th for members and non-members. We have the Just Transition funding, even though that's under Laois County Council, I'll just give a shout out, is on. There is an information evening on the 16th of April in the Talbot Hotel and on the 24th of April in the Heritage Hotel. Just one thing, the increased cost of business grant scheme is closing on the 1st of May. Companies will have to apply through the Laois County Council website for that. There is a collaboration and innovation fund at the moment for increasing adult literacy. That's probably a bit too late, but the closing date is the 4th of April, which is Thursday for that. That involves you having to have a public service partner. On the 23rd of April is the closing date for the Sustainable Impact Awards, and they're run by Chambers Ireland, and they have new categories this year. So if any business would like to be put forward, please get in contact with me. If they have businesses supporting human rights, volunteering awards, health and well-being awards, environmental and biodiversity awards, people might remember that David from Ballykilcavan was actually one of the finalists in it last year. And I think that's it. Oh, on the 21st of May, SkillNets Ireland in Carlow are having a Thriving at Work, a free event in Kilkenny looking at wellness in the workplace, just to keep everyone a bit calm in these mad times.
Absolutely.
Oh, and I can't forget Tradfest is on in Port Laois the weekend of the 7th of April.
Fantastic, because actually Tullamore was on just there the weekend before last.
Yeah.
And it's a great event. And actually what struck out was the amount of young people just going around the town, musical instruments on their back. Great event, and worth for anybody to get out and support. But so far, the reception for your business council, I can only imagine there's plenty of engagement.
Yeah, lots of engagement. I think people really want to get involved, because that way you can't give out about it, because you've actually been involved in what it's becoming and what it wants to be.
Yeah.
So it's a great way to get your spoke in.
Yeah, a very true statement as well. I mean, we're often, we can all be guilty of wanting things to go a certain direction or certain things to happen, but we ourselves can be the ones who can bring about and affect that change if we take action as well.
Yeah.
And of course, you're still welcome to people getting in touch. They can email yourself and contact the Chamber there, or even just drop in and have their speak.
And thanks a million for allowing us to do a whistle stop of Laois.
Not at all. No, that's it. Look, and again, that's replicated across so many counties. Huge amount of events coming up, and plenty of great stuff happening. Jackie, well done, and talk to you again soon on Taking Care of Business. Jackie Carroll there, the CEO of Laois Chamber Alliance. I did notice on the Westmeath or the Mullingar Chamber website today, they have details up there of the Midlands Career Expo for 2024. This is following on from the success of previous years, and they're announcing the return of the Midlands Career Expo for its third year, and it says save the date, Saturday 14th of February. Oh, that's past. Jesus, there we go. I thought that was coming later in the day. My apologies on that. I didn't realise it was gone. Shows what I was up to on Valentine's Day, doesn't it? So anyway, I'm sure that'll be back for 2025. My bad there, apologies. Time for me to wrap it up so you can get out of the big chair. Just to say a huge thank you to all this evening's contributors, to Jackie Carroll, who we've just heard from there, from Katrina Morden from the Atom Cluster at the start, and looking at how industry and academia and various bodies are coming together to help businesses to kind of de-risk and take some of the uncertainty out of global supply chains, because uncertainty is the one thing we can say about supply chains for the past 4 or 5 years. To Dararka Dennis there from EY, talking about the results of their annual CFO survey, those key areas. Ultimately, they're all expecting growth and average about 11% for their business, so very positive, but also outlining the key challenges. And I also spoke with Helen Bracken, one of the owners of Fox Covert Farm in Kilcormac, now growing and processing hemp seed. I'm beautiful. I'm going home with some product here this evening. Definitely going to try these. Packet of brownies, sure. What more could you want from being on air?